Chapter 13. Denny's Affair. Table 7 at the local Denny's had inadvertently taken on the role of Western Wave's Mission Control Center, as the computer monitors updated with the most recent changes to the personnel distribution plot. The Bluetooth earpiece that Rachel wore was alive with chatter as the Earth, Weiss Harbor, and the Mars Hub all complained about how the reorganization was going to affect the scheduling. The time for feeling used had passed. She was in the zone, a game where the pieces get moved around to best fit the limited resources available. The problem being, figure out how to deal with the extra bodies that her father had suddenly dumped on the surface of the moon. It was a welcome distraction when the president's name appeared on her phone.
"Please hold for the president," was heard in the earpiece as the waitress read back the order.
"That's a patty melt with fries and extra pickles. Did you want a refill on your coffee, hon?"
"Yes, please."
"Rachel?" Susan sounded stern.
"Madam President,"
Rachel acknowledged, looking exhausted and receiving a quizzical look from the hostess.
"So, he stole the ship? Is that about right?"
"Yep. Right out from under our noses.
His access codes were still valid for the equipment that came out of the Calico, and yep."
"And he's going to retrieve the comms unit?"
"Yep."
"He did ask Sarah and me to tell you he was sorry, and you can arrest him when he gets back."
"We enabled a lot of resources to locate him, Rachel. He will be made to answer for this." Susan was furious at that man. She could only guess how his daughters felt.
"I know. We told him as much."
Rachel was miffed, too. Her father was safe, and that was a wonderful thing, but this was unacceptable.
"Do you know how he was capable of pulling off this stunt?"
"Probably the cadets."
That end was being investigated now, and oh, will there be hell to pay if they are the culprits, Susan promised herself.
"Sarah is contacting... Oh, wait, Madam President? You are also on with Sarah and maybe Casey LeBlanc from the Weiss Company. Hang on."
"He stole a ship, Casey,"
Sarah's words came through. Rachel was just about to interrupt when Casey shot back.
"How can he steal a ship, Sarah? They're his ships."
"Not anymore, they're not."
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?" It was getting heated.
"Sarah..."
Rachel's voice was cut off.
"I committed Dad to an asylum for psychiatric help. He should be under observation right now."
"You committed your father?"
There was an uncomfortable pause.
"If I find out you are doing some shady shit to try and gain control of Western Wave, I will bring the entire might of the Weiss Group down on your head. You got that?"
"Sarah!"
Rachel tried again.
"How dare you?"
Rachel could not believe what she had just heard.
"He retired, Casey, and turned the company over to Rachel and me. There is no shady shit going on. I can't believe..."
"He retires, so you send him to the funny farm? What the hell am I supposed to make of that little fact, Sarah?"
"Sarah!"
Rachel screamed into the phone. People at several nearby tables suddenly stopped eating and looked her way. They saw a slight blush rising on her cheek.
"Not now, Rachel!"
Sarah was not finished, and in a firm voice said,
"He died, Casey."
"Who died?" Casey LeBlanc was flabbergasted by everything he had heard so far.
"Dad died,"
she stated flatly. His response made her wish she had chosen a different line of attack.
"You just said that he stole a ship. What the hell is wrong with you? If anyone needs to be put away..."
"We brought him back, Casey, but he might not be himself."
"Well, Sarah, he seemed fine to me when I talked to him. Maybe what has got him ticked off is you sending him to the loony bin. Did you ever think of that?"
The president sat with her eyes closed, thumb under the chin, index and middle finger supporting her head at the temples, with the occasional smile that would creep in as Rachel tried her best.
"Sarah, I've got the..."
"Not now, Rachel,"
she growled and then hit back.
"If I find out that you help stage his kidnapping, then you're the one who's going to be put away."
"Kidnapping?"
Casey was staring at the phone in front of him, totally bewildered.
So now he's been kidnapped. I am recording all this, Sarah, and after I hang up, I'm going to have my lawyers begin a criminal investigation into what is happening with you and your father. It seems obvious to me that you're forcing him out on some technicality that will allow you to commit him to some nut house so you can take over. Well, I'm going to make sure. Mr. LeBlanc, is it?
The call was growing tiresome.
Who's this?
It's Susan Capshaw, Mr. LeBlanc. President Susan Capshaw.
So you're the one behind this?
John had mentioned to Casey some of his misgivings regarding the president.
John told me that one day you might try and steal his drive technology, so what? You've enlisted the help of his daughters and had the guy committed? Well, Madam President, if you think...
Casey!
Rachel shouted. Susan had gone back to resting her eyes and relaxing. The people sitting near Rachel's table, listening in, were not so relaxed.
Casey, stop!
Shouted Rachel.
You've got it all wrong, and if you don't simmer down, you're gonna have a heart attack.
Well, then, maybe you'd like to try and explain it, because right now, I'm wanting to call the cops on all of you.
His face was bright red. It took the better part of 30 minutes, but Casey's pulse rate was back to normal, and Rachel's order was devoured.
So you admit that you gave him a ride to Weiss Harbor?
Sarah crowed.
Of course I gave him a ride to the harbor. What of it? And you didn't check with anyone to find out if it was okay?
The moment the words left her mouth, she realized how ignorant they sounded. Unfortunately, it also spun Casey right back up.
Sarah, I've heard some treasured things out of you before, but that statement just made the top of the list. Who should I have checked with when the man who built...
Mr. LeBlanc, we all understand the confusion this conversation is exacting, and we know you did what you thought was right. I'm sorry that you and Sarah are fighting. It's not necessary, nor is it productive.
What the hell is so special about that recording, girls? Casey was feeling the pendulum swing in his direction for a change.
Dad had a dream about some world-ending catastrophe, and he thinks there might be evidence of it on the recorder.
Rachel felt the need to speak.
What world?
Casey asked, concerned.
This world.
Rachel's words came out a bit sarcastically.
This world? What? And that doesn't bother any of you?
It was a dream, Mr. LeBlanc, the president emphasized.
You girls remember the other dream he had? And please, call me Casey, Madam President.
What dream, Casey?
Ask the girls. They were sitting right there with me and Trevor at the harbor.
Ladies?
Asked the president.
He figured out the step 3 drive in a dream. I do not see what that has to do with anything. All he's done is caused a nationwide manhunt, scared the shit out of Sarah and me, and taken the Persian out of service for a month, all over a stupid dream.
Rachel's neighbors were captivated by her side of the conversation.
A dream that so frightened him that he went to all this trouble to try and falsify it?
Girls, what you just said is starting to scare me, and it should you, too. Casey began rubbing his eyes. There was a silence for several seconds before Casey spoke up again.
This doctor, what did he think about the dream and how it relates to all the rest of this little adventure?
The doctor was never informed of the little adventure, as you put it. He was there to evaluate and get John to open up about all that was in the dream.
Susan respectfully retaliated.
And did he?
Casey asked no one in particular.
Did he what?
Asked Rachel.
Did he tell the doctor about the dream?
Yeah, he did,
according to the psychiatrist who evaluated him.
Well, how did it match up with what happened?
Casey demanded. It was the president's turn again.
Casey, the psychologist was not given certain information about the rescue or how John's body was found, or the fact that he was resuscitated. There are certain things we are holding back from the public for right now.
The pause was uncomfortable.
What a parade of idiots,
Casey finally blurted out. The president raised her hand to stop her chief of staff from exposing her thoughts.
Rachel, get on that damn phone of yours and get the doctor on the call, understand? Now!
Casey was reddening again. Fortunately, by the time the doctor was brought on, he was calling. "Dr. Reed, you are on with my sister and the president," Rachel announced.
"Oh, I see," the doctor responded, then added, "What a terrible thing to happen to your father. Is there any news?"
Eyes rolled from one end of the country to the other.
"Doctor," the president jumped in, feeling it was her job to move things along. "It turns out that John West wasn't kidnapped, but escaped. He stole a ship and is in pursuit of a video comms unit that I believe he talked to you about. Do you know to what I refer?"
"I do. He spoke of the glasses at length. You really need to convince him to come back in. He obviously is not a well man."
"He was well enough to make all of you people look like simpletons," Casey pointed out.
"That's enough of that, Mr. LeBlanc," the president chastised.
"Back to Mr. LeBlanc," Casey smiled to himself.
"I'm sorry, who are you?" Dr. Reed asked.
"He's family," Sarah said hastily. "And a severe pain in the ass," she told herself.
"Family. Well, thanks for that, Sarah. I've always felt the same," Casey smiled to himself.
The president gathered her thoughts for another run at it.
"Doctor, we need to know what he told you about the dream he had. We are trying to match up what really happened with what he told you. And, Doctor, before you use the confidential information excuse, both of his daughters are listening and agree that the information needs to be released. So please, Doctor."
"Let me get the file. One moment, please."
"My preliminary diagnosis is that he is somewhat delusional. He seems to think that he helped rescue an alien species he calls the Lobaline from a planet that, in his words, is experiencing catastrophic electrical damage."
"Yeah, well, that happened," Sarah interjected.
"I'm sorry, what was that?" The doctor stopped for clarification.
"That part is true. We rescued 827 Talons and 33 of the Lobaline species from the planet he describes."
"That's correct. Go on."
"I'm sorry. You're telling me that part of the story is true?"
"Oh, for Christ's sake, someone tell him what happened or I will," Casey threatened.
It took another quarter hour, but in the end, what could be heard was a paper shredder in operation as the doctor destroyed the obviously useless report he had been compiling.
"The staff at the quarantine center somehow expect me to make a serious diagnosis with flawed and incomplete data? Your father is fine. I am releasing him from my care. This has been a very disturbing phone call. If there is nothing else, I have real patients that need me. Good day."
And the doctor was gone.
"I'm leaving too, Sarah. Do not ever ask me again to check if it's okay for anything your father does. Stop in, girls, when you get to Houston. And good luck."
A soft chuckle could be heard just before Casey hung up. The line was silent for a period, and then Sarah spoke.
"I assumed he knew. I mean, the other doctors were aware of most of what happened to Dad. I really thought he knew.
Some of what had happened hasn't been released yet, and Dr. Reed was not in the loop. He was brought in to provide an unbiased opinion, but certainly he lacked important information. Not that having your father observed was a bad idea, and you both may have still decided not to go get the glasses, but for sure, this was not handled properly." Another moment of pause, and the president asked,
"Your father won't try something on his own, will he?"
"Try something?" Rachel sat, shaking her head, eyes squinting as she tried to understand the question.
"Well, he'll see what's on the recording. And if it's something he feels he can do something about, would he? On his own?"
"He can't see what's on them. The dedicated reader is here. It was removed as part of the decommissioning of the Calico, and that unit is in storage on the moon."
so he has to come back to see what's on him. Voiced out loud, but more of a thought. Rachel, I would like that reader delivered here to my office. Can you do that for me? Can Sarah and I come along when Dad checks it out? I'll put the kettle on. I need to go too, ladies. Everyone needed to go. It had been a long call. West Archives. The disappointment in realizing the downloader had not made it on the flight was tempered by the fact that the ship was performing flawlessly. It did, however, make for a long trip back home, but the endless video recorded during the Talon's stay helped pass the time. They parked the Persian in a high Earth orbit and awaited the replacement crew, assembled to begin fulfilling some of the tasks that Rachel urgently needed addressing. The band of pirates were flown to the central bridge and deposited near a group of stone-faced individuals, one being General Stephen Baring, Chief of Staff for the Space Force. They were herded into vehicles and, without fanfare, ferried directly to Washington, D.C., and eventually the White House. Entering the Oval Office, John saw that both Sarah and Rachel were already there, along with Marty and Paige, who appeared to be speaking again.
I'm glad you're okay, Rachel said to her father.
I'm glad you feel that way, he said, and smiled at her.
I can't believe that you, of all people, went along with it, Shannon, Sarah said in a rebuking voice.
Sarah? She was actually kidnapped, John corrected her.
I was sleeping on the mat in the workout space, and I didn't know what had happened until about 2 hours out.
So your dad's right about the kidnapping, Shannon said playfully.
Would you like to press charges, Miss Beale? The president voiced. He's facing several, so yours can certainly be added to the list.
Susan was standing facing the assembly.
No, ma'am, Shannon spoke with concern. I would, however, like to know if it was worth it.
Yes, so would we all, Susan replied.
How's that retirement going, John?
Seems to be about as successful as your vacations. He wanted to say something about one of the vacations they both had shared, but he thought better of it.
I got what I was after.
Well, perhaps we should have a look before I render judgment, she spoke sternly. Major, if you would.
Marty walked over and accepted the headset that was offered up. The slight grin on Marty's face changed to serious as he turned back towards the officials in the room and walked to the downloader. The file was transferred to a laptop that was tied to a large screen against the wall. He selected a time just after the cadets bid farewell and closed the door.
What's it doing? General Baring asked.
Near as I can tell, General, it's either modifying how the drive functions or more than likely the drive is modifying how that prothesis is operating, or both.
My God, said a voice from one of the advisors in the room. Is that what it looks like in step space?
No, was a common response from most of the people in the room.
You've seen the coverage. It's that off-colored white, someone in the congregation said.
That's not quite right, John put on his instructor hat. The glow that you describe is the outer sheath of the plasma torus surrounding the vessel. What we see there could very well be the gravity plane.
And that?
Marty was having to stop the video every time a question was raised. This could take a while, he sighed inwardly. I was wondering if I saw that correctly. I'm assuming it's a Z-pinch, John said with confidence. I think, he corrected himself.
What is a Z-pinch, Mr. West? The president asked.
It's where a plasma is supercompressed by large currents, generating very tight magnetic fields. The sun is powered by one, John said without thinking.
The sun isn't powered by a Z-pinch, came the rebuke from the president's science advisor.
Sorry, never mind. Anyway, it looks to me like old One Arm is using the step drive to modify the local Birkeland current, and a Z-pinch is occurring either
on his arm, or in the drive, or both. It's beyond my guessing ability.
So that's what your drive does? It modifies this current you keep speaking of?
The science advisor asked, mystified.
No. My drive grabs hold of the electrically tensioned gravity field. This guy appears to be modifying that field with his gizmo.
Marty moved on.
The loud crash startled not only the lookers-on in the video, but also most of the people in the Oval Office. This brought on a response from Shannon.
See, accidents happen, she stated, thinking back to the day she destroyed a drive with her short sleeve.
I think that one is the bigwig, John narrated.
The video continued and eventually showed the 3D animation being delivered in high quality from the prosthesis. It showed the small rectangles near the dead star. It showed the estimated time to completion by the rotation of the planets around the star. It showed the line to the adjacent star system. It also showed the Z-pinch from the two adjacent stars being used to modify a third star's electrical potential, until finally, the pinch at the third star caused it to flare up.
A relaxation oscillator? John speculated to himself.
As they watched, during the peak output of the new star, the second planet suddenly began to show signs of life, as if a machine were switched on. The tiny rectangles became highlighted, as if activated for some unknown purpose. It did not seem to take very long, and the third star dimmed back to the weak glow mode it had earlier. But the machine on the second planet still appeared to be operational. Then came the movement along the line to the third star, and what appeared to be the demise of one of the planets. With a sense of dread, John thought, "I remember this part." A quick back and forth from the aliens caused the one producing the show to highlight and zoom in on the planet, presumably the only inhabited planet out of all of them. A sudden flurry of activity, a raised shout from John, and suddenly the camera was on the floor of the ship looking along its length. Hurried movements and a series of hands and arms were seen manipulating the body. Then it was moving quickly down a corridor and into a dimly lit room, where the comms unit was removed and placed in a container. The video eventually ended when the memory was full, hours later, still looking at the inside of a darkened box. The Oval Office was silent. Everyone was trying to process what they had seen. The implications were there, and it was not good for the home team.
"Sorry, Dad, for not believing you," Sarah managed to get out.
"Right now, I kind of wish you and Rachel were bitching me out for wasting everyone's time," he said with a look of concern. John continued studying the screen as nervous laughter broke out in the room. President Capshaw had Marty move the timeline back to where the two pinches were oscillating back to the third, smaller pinch. As it progressed, she asked,
"What do you think that's all about?"
"I think they're trying to power the second planet in the Proxima Centauri system. See how the Brooklyn current is flowing out of the star and culminating in a strong current at the planet's poles? And see how it's highlighting its behavior? They expect something to happen on that planet, is my guess." John studied the scene. Wondering out loud, he said, "I'd like to know what those rectangle things are." West interviews. As he and the girls walked out of the White House on their way to grab lunch, Rachel, looking at her father in admiration, was suddenly struck by a thought.
"So, are you retiring, or what?"
"I'd like to, but for the time being, let's put it in the or what category," he said, with a gleam in his eye. "By the way, Sarah," John asked with a smirk, "what's an IOU, Buck?"
"How do you mean?"
she replied, caught off guard.
"Well, I was going over some of the video from the clinic, and it appears you lost 84 IOU bucks to the Talon with the broken bones. Did you pay up?"
Rachel was suddenly intrigued. He continued, "Poker, was it?" So, what exactly is it? An IOU book. Lobeline Transcripts. The meeting room in the Lobeline vessel was an octagon-shaped series of buttresses that reached high overhead to support a clear, thick piece of blue diamond that stretched across the entire expanse of the ceiling. The inherent facets allowed starlight to create endless patterns of changing color to the viewer. Combined with the soft stringed instruments playing in the background, the setting afforded the attendees a spiritually uplifting environment to conduct business. It did nothing to alleviate the impulse Lanpusha had of wanting to reach for the faces on the screen through the vastness of space. He visualized planting the three Roomerions on the end of a power lance and watching as their bodies slowly vaporized in a glowing, smoky pool of agony. Regrettably, he was there as an observer, and if necessary, one to make suggestions, nothing more. With the promise of renewed vigor and an on-time schedule, the two groups parted company and the video screen went blank. As Lanpusha sat there pondering the future, the room emptied out, leaving him with the turmoil that flooded his mind. The active Dodge entities should be destroyed to eliminate this problem, he thought to himself, fully aware that such a thing would never happen. A weapon of this magnitude is too important to destroy, and the idea of replacing all the containers, why, that is just paranoia talking. Yet here we are. He sat, rubbing his eyes. The Chesapeake War had seen the development and deployment of the Dodge with devastating effectiveness. A composite built from tiny AI nodes that behaved as a mobile communication network. Each node could reach out to any other node in the vicinity, and if there was no obstruction, would physically attempt to join. The primary goal of each node is to dominate its surroundings, mitigated by a willingness to collaborate with compatible nodes, so that over time, clusters would form into a larger group, becoming an intelligence with a single purpose, domination of its surroundings. That single purpose could then be manipulated by introducing an image into the collective consciousness of the group, thereby encouraging this insatiable need with an objective. A fast-reacting, semi-fluid structure that at any moment could be softened or hardened, manipulated to act as an impactor, an enclosure, a conduit, or insulator, along with the ability to manipulate the underlying forces of the universe itself. This facet allowed the Dodge to generate motion, intense heat, even project energy. The construct becomes an unstoppable force with no emotion, no expectation, or flights of fancy, only a desire to overpower whatever image lay in its thoughts. But the war is over, and their usefulness past. Lack of direction means that, other than domination, the only meaningful stimulation for the intelligence would be the call of another Dodge. If allowed to combine, the results would be a stagnant collection of incompatible nodes, unable to function as designed. In this combined state, the past experiences would interfere, creating a need to separate the nodes into their unique constituents prior to reflow. The reflow process returns the nodes to a pristine level where no memories exist, only the desire to dominate and collaborate. Once achieved, the passive nodes are securely locked away in zero-energy containers until such time as they are needed again. Keeping the nodes in this pristine, pre-born state is the assignment of Lanpusha and his associates. The control for these constructs is a link between a Lobeline mind and the artificial consciousness of the Dodge. In the case of Lanpusha, the link came in the form of a prosthesis. This prosthesis was a replacement for a missing appendage, and it contained the nodal link used by all the controllers to interface with the Dodge. The accidental loss of the appendage had driven Lanpusha to studying the sciences and the histories of the species. His intensity for concentrated learning was quickly realized, and when a replacement for a controller had become available, he was asked to enroll in the order. The multifunction prosthesis was fitted, and his training began. The term controller is meant to signify that the mind can bestow the image to the artificial consciousness in a clear and concise manner without distortion or emotion. A mind in complete control of the image. Without this control, the image presented to the intelligence would vary, meaning the rippling restructuring of the construct's node could not achieve a satisfactory form. The artificial consciousness would never settle on a single overpowering entity, but would rather coalesce into a throbbing mass of randomly placed nodes with no specific purpose other than to dominate its surroundings. If done correctly, the consciousness of the Dodge will act on an idea placed there by a controller. Instilling a stable image into the artificial consciousness causes it to obsess until the basic need to overpower was accomplished, usually resulting in the destruction of the image. At War's End, the plan had the nodes of the Dodge separated and placed into zero-energy states, hidden on barren planets around dead stars. With each node cocooned and only a few in each storage container, the chance of an artificial consciousness somehow reconstituting itself was virtually non-existent. That was until the defects in the zero-energy state container's design was realized. If a host dead star were to flare up to a critical level, the containers could begin to deteriorate, and if enough nodes are brought back from the zero-energy state, they would begin to form a consciousness. The communication between the nodes was electromagnetic in nature, something they could feel, hear, and produce. With each node cocooned, they were unable to gather, but they could still try to reach out. That is exactly what was happening to the resuscitated group on the dead world in the Havlon system. The nodes had managed to form enough of a consciousness to realize an intelligence was somewhere close. It could hear them through the electromagnetic spectrum and had managed to make them aware of its existence. This basic communication lasted only a short period of time. Then, as suddenly as it started, it stopped. Now the consciousness was back to merely listening to a myriad of signals being generated from a great distance. "Come back!" the primitive mind cried out into the void. Lanpusha and his team were tasked with regularly checking multiple storage sites, and if the problems were found, report the extent of the contamination and, if need be, take steps to contain the problem. It was found that the extent of the Havlon problem required immediate action, so a plan was instigated to get materials to build a Kalaxitar unit, break the bonds, and re-establish hibernation of the nodes. Sending the nodes to zero-energy state without breaking the bonds would ruin the nodes. They needed to be at a basic level before the hibernation, or the more advanced nodes would corrupt the artificial consciousness upon activation. Lanpusha needed the Kalaxitar, and the species hired to mine the material with the unique electromagnetic properties had very nearly caused a catastrophe. The apologies had been profound from the Rumorian management, and they promised to double their efforts to get the job done, though no one was sure how they would perform that piece of magic. Regardless, the work was behind, and he and his team needed to finish here and move on. Lanpusha wondered, how many more Dodge containers were failing on other planets? To make matters worse, judging by the data, the two active stars in this local cluster were undergoing another oscillation, which likely meant that the dead star would flare again very soon. White House interviews. As the president sat alone, reviewing the footage collected during the time with the Talons, she was struck by the similarities of the two species. Her mind was absorbed watching how well the two groups got along and hope that a real relationship could be established.
John was right.
Potential trading partners indeed, she told herself as the encounter moved on.
They have sure taken a liking to Dr. Schubert's telescope. Maybe he could be invited to surrender a working model for export.
The possibilities seemed endless.
And the cockroaches? If they want them, they can have them.
God, she thought, they eat those things.
Well, not anymore after the volcanic eruption that kicked out a lot of something.
One of the geophysicists on the crew figured it was boric acid, which caused all of their little edible treats to die off. The thought of sitting down to a feast of live cockroaches gave her a shiver. The other video of John's encounter resurfaced in her mind.
Something tells me I'm going to have a few nightmares of my own,
Susan mused as her thoughts drifted.
Were they trying to jumpstart Proxima using the other two stars?
That really was not the implication. It was something else.
Build something on the second planet to destroy the Earth?
And what? They don't care?
If they didn't care, why bother giving John West's body back?
Something was going to have to be done to better understand what they saw, and she didn't have a clue what. Susan continued to watch the footage as John and Sarah stood in the supply area, talking amongst themselves. It was obvious there was something in the works. The talons were in a bit of a formation, several deep and several wide.
Thanking them?
Susan wondered to herself, turning up the volume and paying closer attention. She could see Maisha facing the body of talons, practicing a phrase.
No, Sarah, John said, addressing his daughter.
The reason they took such an interest is because they all thought he was being controlled through the implant. You know, the wild arm gestures and the intensity. So, they all thought that the guy was kind of funny to watch. Plus, they know some of our language, and because of his repetitive nature, they can pick out a few words. Well, not really, but kind of. Anyway, they thought he was being controlled remotely, until I pointed out that the implant is designed to help with hearing. Then it was like, oh, they understood that.
So, what do you want to show me?
Sarah sighed. It was obvious to Susan that Sarah had better things to do. Well, there's that tribute coming up to honor his legacy, and so I figured, hey, I'd have the talents say hi.
The talents,
Sarah said with a blank look.
They didn't know him any better than you, or even what a tribute is. And you want them to do it?
This did not sound good.
They've been practicing. You mean you're teaching them to do something they don't understand? They are not a circus act, Dad.
Watch. Hey, Misha, do it again so Sarah can see, he urged. Watch now. It's kind of funny. John was grinning as Sarah crossed her arms and waited for the show to begin. Misha turned to address her fellow travelers, then said,
Russ, in this corner here, you a known human.
She was stabbing her finger at the deck of the ship several times, while the group behind her provided their version of smiles, some waving, along with several thumbs up. As she advanced the timeline forward some more, Susan wondered to herself,
who's Russ?
The on-duty agent, standing outside the closed door of the office of the president, was suddenly surprised by her sudden outpouring of laughter.
She needs to do that a little more often, he thought, smiling to himself.
The end,
Chandra's grandmother emphasized. She could tell all three kids were running out of steam. Dottie's half-hearted objection was ignored by the unsympathetic adult.
You two need to get to bed, Gramps said, eyeballing the two tired young girls.
Darius was in the process of shutting down the computer when he began to yawn as well.
We are moving the camper tomorrow, so I need you girls up and raring to go early, he finished with.
Thanks for letting me look through the files, Darius spoke sincerely.
I'm sure the girls will want to do some more research, Gramps told the youth. You guys didn't get that far today, he added. With a good night and a quick wave, Darius was out the door, headed for home, and the lights began getting turned off. Denise came in and sat down beside her husband. Looking over at the face, she commented,
You seem to enjoy giving the kids a history lesson today.
He nodded his agreement. A little trip down memory lane.
You okay?
She asked, never sure of his mood once he started thinking about his missing friend.
I'm good, he admitted with a smile.
We are setting up the camper tomorrow, right? He added.
Uh-huh,
she said, gently laying her head on his shoulder. Both silently peered out the front room window into the ever-increasing darkness and the twinkling points of light in the sky. The End. You've been listening to Elusive Steps by John Selly. Narrated by John Selly. We hope you have enjoyed this audiobook.